Hello world, and we are back. Welcome back to Real Talk with Rajan Radio on WDRB Media, the voice of the community. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you are here with me, and I appreciate that. I am your host, Rajan Lewis. Now, here on Real Talk with Rajan, nothing's off limits. On any given week, we could be discussing anything from sports to music to politics. You name it, we'll discuss it. Now, for those who are new to the show, Real Talk with Rajan has a goal of shining a light on talking about what's happening in our world and shining a light on the positive things that are happening in this community and beyond. Now, as the executive director of Low Country Youth Services, a youth development organization out of the Charleston area of South Carolina and the father of five wonderful children, I know how important it is to provide positive examples for our young people to look to. This is the reason why I wrote my first book, I Need Answers, Volume 1, a book that highlights the stories of men through the lens of whether or not they had a positive male role model and how that impacted their lives. This book can be found anywhere you can find books, or you can go to my website, www.realtalkwithrajan.com, and purchase a signed copy directly from me. And this show has been brought to you by Low Country Youth Services. Since 2008, Low Country Youth Services has been serving the Charleston area of South Carolina by providing quality youth development and mentorship initiatives. 15 years later, Low Country Youth Services is still building strong men and young women who are learning to love themselves and their communities. To find out more about Low Country Youth Services, please visit www.lowcountryyouth.org. And if you'd like to become a sponsor with Real Talk with Rajan Radio, please shoot me an email at realtalk with rezsaun at gmail.com. That's Real Talk with Rajan at gmail.com, and I will gladly inform you about how to advertise through this platform. I love supporting small businesses, authors, nonprofits, musical artists, potential elected officials, and more. Allow me to let the world know you. Now that I've gotten that out the way, let's get to what you all are here for. Today, we are here to have a very important discussion about an upcoming election with someone who, as I mentioned earlier in the preview, is someone that I've gotten to know and love for the work that he's done in the community. He's someone that's really no stranger to the people of Charleston, Berkeley, and Dorchester counties. He's been doing amazing work at the State House level for District 109. I bring to you Representative Dion Tedder. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
I am great. I'm great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Representative Tedder. Please introduce yourself to the audience for those who may not know you.
Yeah. So I'm Dion Tedder. I'm state representative for District 109 in the House. That's Charleston and Dorchester counties. I've been serving since 2020 election when I was first elected and then reelected in 2022. And now I am seeking the seat of State Senate District 42, which was currently or recently held by former State Senator Marlon Kempson.
All right. And thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for your time of service as well at the State House. So let's talk sort of about your journey to getting there. So who is Dion Tedder? You know, we know Representative Dion Tedder, but let's dig a little deeper into who is Dion. Who's little Dion? Tell us about yourself.
So originally, you know, it's no secret. I was not born in Charleston. So I'm originally from Durham, North Carolina. I was born and raised there. Grew up with both my parents. My mom, working class people. So I grew up where my parents sacrificed a lot, and they worked very hard so that I can be in the positions that I'm in now and have the successes I have now. And so I really appreciate them for that. I'm a first generation college student. My parents didn't go to college. My mom's a secretary. My father was a custodian, or janitor. And I saw how hard they both worked. Oftentimes, particularly my mom, putting in all the work as a secretary, but then, you know, the people with the higher titles usually get all the credit. And she's the one that's there late nights doing the work. And the same with my dad, seeing him go into the hospital to clean up overnight, third shift, having to miss certain things because he had to work and provide for his family. And so I come from a working class family. I've seen my parents struggle, but I've also seen them work really hard. And it paid off because I was able to go to South Carolina State University. That's how I got to. That's how I got here to South Carolina when I was 18 years old. I graduated high school June of 2008, and my father unexpectedly passed away July of 2008. So just shy of a month, less than a month after I graduated from high school. And so it was a difficult moment because, one, I lost my dad. Two, I'm my mom's only child. And so for me, I was the man. You know, at that point, I was 18 and I was concerned with, you know, I needed to take care of mom. So I really contemplated not going to college because I needed to, I thought I needed to stay home and get a job and just work to help her pay the bills because my dad did most of that. And so my family being supportive as they are, they pushed me to go. They're like, you got to go. Your dad would have wanted you to go to state. And plus I had a full academic scholarship. And so, you know, that opportunity may not come around again. And so I ended up going down to Orangeburg, 2008, no family in South Carolina at that time, at least that I knew of. And so just went, you know, got dropped off and the rest was history. I fell in love at State, man, and some great friends, fell in love with the school because my mom told me that, you know, if you don't like it after a year, we'll let you transfer back home. And I stayed. I was in the Honors College. I was in the Marching 101. I played the trumpet, was very active on campus. I've always been active in leadership roles. I was in student government. My freshman year, I was a freshman class senator. I ran for that because I've always wanted to be involved to help shape other people's experiences and make sure that they have enjoyable experiences, but also opportunities that other people didn't have. And junior class president, and I was in student government my senior year. I was Mr. Honors College at State. So just kind of all around, you know, that's just my personality, just always been involved in everything, sometimes too much at one time, stretching myself thin. I pledged Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity incorporated. Okay. So I did a lot at State. Graduated there 2012 at Magna Cum. Went to USC, got in law school there. So then I transitioned to Columbia. Spent 4 years in Columbia, 3 years in law school, graduated, and then I had the opportunity to clerk for a circuit court judge, which is a unique experience because that's where, you know, I obviously knew I was going to practice law, but to sit on the bench with a circuit court judge, you just get to see it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
You get to see all sides, which I think helped shape my practice and the ability for me to be able to work across the aisle, because in court is the same way as in politics. You know, you got to work with the opposing counsel, with the other side sometimes to get things done. And so that's how I got, you know, law school, graduated there. And then how I got to Charleston was my wife, she was going to MUSC. She got into MUSC. And so I moved to Charleston, followed her, and the rest is history. And now I'm here. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I mean, you mentioned a lot in there in terms of just your journey of getting here. And thanks for really slow walking us through it, because maybe a lot of people haven't had the opportunity to yet hear, you know, that story of how Dion even came to it, came to South Carolina. So I didn't know you went to Marching 101. So, you know, go Bulldogs. And I learned a lot of things right there, but we actually need to pause for a break. So I'm going to come right back. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come right back and learn more about Dion Tedder, Representative Dion Tedder, and Lil Dion, as I decided to call him, Dion Tedder, as we come back. And you are listening to Real Talk with Rajan Radio. I am your host, Rajan Lewis, and you're tuned into WDRB Media, the voice of the community. We'll be right back after the break. Keep on learning. And we are back. We are back. We are back. And welcome back to WDRB Media, the voice of the community. Streaming live. Thank you to those who are listening, streaming live through the free TuneIn Radio app, Streama, Apple Music, Radio Seed, and much more. And I also want to thank the people who are watching live on Facebook. If you're not watching live on Facebook, but you'd like to catch these live, all you need to go do is go to Real Talk with Rajan, and you will find when I'm streaming and catch all the interviews live. So if you're not watching it live and you're watching a replay, it's cool. I'm mad at you. All right. We are having a conversation with Representative Dion Tedder, where as he's telling us, in the first segment, he actually told us a lot about, you know, his journey to becoming Representative Dion Tedder, as opposed to just Mr. Dion Tedder. And I'm really excited now to talk about he's in the position of District 109. Let's talk a little bit about your win to District 109, and then let's talk about, you know, the decision to run for Senate District 42. So how do we go from, all right, you came from Durham. We talked about that. You got here. You got to South Carolina State. You passed the bar. You became a lawyer. And then, so how do we end up in House District 109? What happens there?
Yeah. So in law school at Carolina, I was always engaged in the political realm, so to say. So I would actually go to city council meetings when I lived in Columbia. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's funny. Myself and one other guy, Jimmy, and he, one of my buddies, he's actually now working with the Biden administration. But we always laugh because we were the only 22 year olds going to a city council meeting all the time. But we were just interested in those things. I've always wanted to be informed, interested in how government works. I'm gonna back up a little bit to explain how I got interested in politics. So my junior year, after my freshman year at State, I had the opportunity to intern on Capitol Hill. I interned for Senator Ted Kennedy, right before he passed away. And, you know, he's the lion of the U.S. Yeah. Senate. And so I learned a lot working with him and his office, and it amazed me at the things that they did, you know, just being from a small town and not really knowing anybody in politics, you know, first generation college student, no lawyers in my family, no politicians. So it was interesting, the exposure I had just being in that space and seeing how the decisions people make, a lot of people who don't look like you and I, the decisions that they make and brokering deals that really affect us back home. And that sparked my interest. And that's when I realized I can be more than just a lawyer. I can also be a legislator and a lawyer. And so that's how I got interested in politics. And that transformed when I was in law school. I was just attending a lot of meetings. I sort of put myself in touch with sitting legislators at the time. I would go introduce myself. I'd follow up, network, be in the spaces that I knew they would be at. And then it just so happened when David Mack, great David Mack, who has a radio show here in Charleston, he held this seat before me. He was retiring. And I found out about that. And actually, some of the current legislators, or at the time, reached out. They said, hey, you've always been interested, because I've always expressed my interest in wanting to run. Just didn't know how to go about doing it or what that looked like. You know, again, being the first person in my family to ever run for public office. And so I jumped in. I said, you know, this is an opportunity. This is my opportunity. He was retiring. It was an open seat. And, you know, my biggest hurdle, as you know, and people that watched the race, was that, you know, people use against me, and people still do it now, that I'm not from Charleston. I'm a Cumbia, not a Benya. Yeah, and that's true. I did come here, but I'm here, okay?
Right.
And I intend to raise my family here. I pay my taxes here. And I do a lot of good. And I think that we have to move away from that, because there are a lot of people who are not from Charleston who live in Charleston, work in Charleston, and have done exceptional things for the people of Charleston.
Yeah.
And so, but that was the biggest attack that was used against me when I first ran. I was the youngest candidate. So obviously I was met with arguments that I was inexperienced, et cetera. But again, just like this race, people try to say the same thing now. And like I told a reporter, they asked me, well, you're the one with the least amount of experience or time in the House, you know, what makes you qualified? And I said, well, I don't equate time with experience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who have a lot of time, but they sit idly. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I think experience is measured by effectiveness, not by time, because you can be, you can hold a position and not be effective for the people. But that's how I got there. In that run, it was three people. It went to a runoff, and then, you know, I was successful. And I think what that showed is, and how I think I went, I connected with people. I was meeting people where they are. I talked directly to the voters, and I wanted them to see who I was. And I think that people, we don't give our people enough credit. I think people can see through the BS, and I think people can sense when somebody is a genuine person and really wanting to do something for the good of the people. And I think that's what resonated with the voters in 2020.
But that absolutely. And like, so that, so now you got elected. You did, I'm so glad you, there's several things you said. And for those who watch the show, you may or may not know that I ran for office last year. And a lot of the stuff that they hit you with, they also hit me with. So trust me, don't feel like, because shoot, I'm from Charleston, right? But I'm not from Somerville. I'm not from Walterboro. So there's a whole lot of, you know, he's not from Somerville. He's not from Walterboro that I faced when I was on the trail. Let me rock another feel for you. Chaka Khan, what you tell me what you wanna do? Do you feel for me the way I feel for you? Chaka Khan, let me tell you what I wanna do. I wanna love you, wanna hug you, wanna squeeze you too. And let me take it in my arm, let me feel you with my charm, Chaka. Cause you know that I'm the one to keep you warm, Chaka. I make it more than just a physical dream. I wanna rock you, Chaka, baby, cause you make me wanna scream. Let me rock you, rock you.
Shaka Khan, let me rock it, let me rock it, Shaka Khan. Let me rock it, that's all I wanna do. Shaka Khan, let me rock it, let me rock it, Shaka Khan. Let me rock it, cause I feel for you. Feel for you.
Briefly, let's talk about how you got to decide to run, because now you've had, what, two terms at District 109, and now you're going to run for Senator Kempson's seat. Briefly, how did that come about?
Yeah, so when I learned that Senator Kempson was resigning to take a position with the Biden administration, I reached out to him, and I said, hey, you know, this is, you know, because that's something I've always wanted to do too. And really the reason why, because people will ask, well, why you're in the House, why don't you just want to stay there? Well, because in the Senate, their rules are different. Mm-hmm. Their rules allow you to be more effective. There's a lot of defense mechanisms. As you know, for people that don't know, I'm a Democrat. And so we're in a super minority.
Yeah.
And so when we show up to Columbia every week, there's 124 members in the House and 36 Democrats. So you just do the math there. And in the House, our rules are so flexible and it's left to interpretation a lot of times, where we don't have the same mechanisms as in the Senate. Their rules allow them to play defense more.
Yeah.
Which is what you have to do when you're in the super minority. Because they are as well in the Senate out of 46 senators, because they can play defense. And by playing defense, I mean they can block bills.
Right.
So the bills that are doing a disservice, in my opinion, to our kids, like taking away curriculum and Black history and things like that, the Senate rules allow for more defense mechanisms to stop those types of things. In the House, not so much. And so I believe that I can be more effective and get more accomplished in the Senate versus the House, just because of the number of people there are there, how the hierarchy works. But also, I wouldn't be abandoning my constituents, because the beauty of my district is that the majority of my House district, 109, falls within Senate District 42. So I would still represent a lot of our constituents,
yeah,
majority of them, and then pick up downtown and a portion of West Ashley.
Yeah.
And so that's why I want to do this. And I think it's important, too, that we have, I'm an attorney, and I always tell people I think that we need more lawyers in the legislature. And that's not to say you have to be a lawyer to serve,
yeah,
but it's important because the type of the types of bills that come through in legislation. I mean, there's so many things under attack right now, literally civil rights. I mean, we've seen the things that are happening. And so there are a lot of legal arguments that have to be made on the floor, in committees, in subcommittees, when we're amending bills and doing things like that. And if we have time, I do want to kind of get into how bills are passed, because I don't think people realize the complexity of it, what all you have to go through and what amendments are and why amendments are effective, et cetera.
So that's a good place right there for us to pause. I have to take another break. We're going to come back. And when we come back, we're actually going to talk about, one, how bills are passed. You know, not everybody's seen Schoolhouse Rock. I'm only a bill. So we'll start with that. And then we'll talk about, you know, your platform in terms of what you want to change and see better through you as the senator for SC Senate District 42. Thank you so much for being tuned in to WDRB, the voice of the community.
gon' pull me over with this off in my ride. So I had to under the armrest, under the leather. And thinking of starting the ways to make my life a little bit better than the never to pay no taxes. Taking a chunk up out of my checks and make my rhymes just look like practice. Buying clothing, ring, roving with my folks. Don't speak about the dirt inside my crew, ain't about no jokes. I know some people don't like the way we flow because they envy. They talking about they bought their mom that they could have been me. You looking to be the butterfly without the caterpillar. Take your time and do it right, cause you gon' make it. I swear my or collapse. One, falling a victim to your grief. Why? You looking to be Big Willie, but you still a C. Why? The information in my skull be poking. Some of y'all on the shoulder, but the other side of the fence, they got y'all.
Struggling's just a part of my day. Many obstacles have been placed in my way. I know the only reason that I make it through is because I never stop believing in you. Some people wonder why we're here in the first place. They can't believe because they ain't never seen your face. But even when you pray that they say you gotta try, can't wait for nobody to come down out the sky. They got to realize that the world's a test. You can only do your best and let them do the rest. They got your life, they got your help. So we're procrastinating.
And we are back. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Real Talk with Rajan Radio and WDRB Media, the voice of the community. I want to thank everybody who's streaming live through the free TuneIn Radio app, Streama, Apple Music, Radio Seed, and more. You are listening to Real Talk with Rajan Radio. I am your host, Rajan Lewis. In my latest book, I Need Answers Volume 1, I speak to men as we ask the question, how important is it to have a positive male role model growing up? Hear from men in their own words about their life story through the lens of having or not having a positive male role model and the impact on them as fathers, husbands, and mentors. To get your copy of I Need Answers Volume 1, please visit bit.ly/ROLEMODELREZ. That's role model res. So bit.ly/role model res, which I have right there on the screen. So getting right back to it. We are speaking to this week on our local celebrity spotlight. We're speaking to Representative South Carolina House District 109 Representative Deion Tedder, who is also running for the seat that was currently vacated by Senator Marlon Kempson as he accepted a position at the White House. Congrats, by the way, Senator Kempson. We know you're going to do amazing work at the White House. So thank you for all that you've done. But somebody's got to take his place. And Representative Tedder has been on here talking to us not only about first segment he talked about, who is Deion? So if you're watching this on the replay, go back and find out who Deion Tedder is. The second segment, we talked about how he joined, how he ended up in the State House. And now we're talking about why he is the guy for that seat and how does a bill happen. So we're going to start back. We're going to work backwards with the Schoolhouse Rock and do the I'm only a bill. So please, how does a bill happen?
Yeah. So, like I said, I think it's important to get a lot of people think that, you know, we just go up there and you can just push a button to pass a bill. And it's not that easy. You have to be effective. You have to have support from both sides of the aisle, especially because of what I mentioned earlier with our numbers being, you know, 124 members and 36 Democrats. Right. And so, What happens is I'll introduce a piece of legislation. So I'll file a bill. And then it gets assigned to a committee. And then it goes to a subcommittee within that full committee. You essentially at some point you have a hearing on that bill. And so say there's a subcommittee hearing, you go over the bill, people debate about it, there's discussion. Outside interests can come in, groups to testify for and against the bill. And then ultimately that those members of that subcommittee, both Republican and Democrat, will vote whether or not to pass it up to full committee or to essentially kill the bill, which means they would vote it down, the majority. And if it goes up to the full committee, the same thing happens again. You have discussion, and now you have more members of the panel. For example, there may be 15 people on a full committee and let's say six in the subcommittee. And so now you have the full committee hearing the bill. Again, there's opportunity for testimony for and against the bill to ask questions about it. And also amendments can be added in the committee level. And what an amendment is essentially, if I wanted to change a line in a bill because it was intended, I wanted to make it mean something else, right? I would do an amendment to change the bill, to change the direction of that bill. And again, that has to be voted on and by the majority to pass. So it's a lot that goes into that. If it passes full committee, it will receive a favorable decision, and then it goes to the House floor. Once it goes to the House floor, that's when all 124 members get to debate that bill. One person goes up and they explain the bill, and anybody can ask questions. Anybody on the floor, all 124 members, can raise their hand and question anything about the bill. And you kind of go back and forth and you want to gain support if it's your bill, obviously. And then ultimately it comes to a vote, and that determines whether it passes or fails. If it passes, then it goes to the Senate, the other chamber, and vice versa. If it started in the Senate, it would go to the House. And they do the same thing. It goes to subcommittee, full committee, and then the Senate floor. And then it can get amended and changed. Sometimes it can get sent back to committee. So it's very complicated. So when somebody passed a bill, that's a big thing, because that means a lot of work went into it. And also, again, you have to be able to work across the aisle to get things done, or you won't garner that support from the opposition.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you for that. Now, for those who, I hope y'all was taking notes at home. There will be a test later. thank you so much, Representative Tedder, for that. Let's talk about you in this seat. So you're running for, you mentioned, you know, how you got in the House. Mm-hmm. Let's start with this. What are some of the things that you're most proud of that you've done as a member of the House of Representatives?
Well, one of my proudest moments is when I passed my first bill my freshman year. And I just told you how complicated the process yep. is. And I had to go through all that to get it done. And again, I was a freshman. And so this was establishing HBCU Day in South Carolina, historically Black colleges and universities. And what that does, some people will say, oh, it's just a day. But this is not a resolution. This is a bill. This was signed into law, enacted by the governor. So this is standing law. And what it did was give our HBCUs more exposure, which gives our kids more opportunity. Every third Tuesday in February, and I specifically chose Black History Month, the HBCUs, all these other schools and organizations get to come up to the State House, but we never do it for all of our HBCUs. And so now that's a thing. And what happens with that is you got to be strategic in certain things. People say, well, it's just some. The opponents of it, you know, people that want to say that it's not anything big, they'll say, well, it's just a day, but it's actually more than that, because what's happened is this past year, South Carolina State has received probably more funding than they have in years. But again, that's because of exposure. I had all the college HBCU presidents up at one time in one room with the governor, having a conversation about what they need and why HBCUs are so important to our state. And we got the governor on record saying that we are important and we produce some of the top and brightest students in the state. And also what's come out of that is internships. Now we have HBCU students interning in the state house for representatives and senators. That's because now what I wanted to do, what my intent was, is to give them access. When I was at South Carolina State, I knew I wanted to get in politics, but I didn't know one state representative, one state senator, didn't have access to them, didn't know how to get access to them. But now these students, they have access. That's the intent. That was my intention there. They come up, we intentionally allow them to go meet with their representatives. They come to the caucus meetings. They get to know who their state reps are, their state senators. And so I was intentional about that because it's about exposure and opportunity. And so now you have these students that can come up and they're asking questions to us. We had this past year, we had a luncheon for them, for the HBCU students, and they were able to ask us questions about what we did. And a lot of them were intrigued. They're like, well, how does this work? And we were breaking it down to them. They get to watch the debate from the balcony. Yeah. And so that's exciting. And those are things that HBCUs matter. And so when I was at State, and like I told you, when I interned on Capitol Hill, for me, it was the exposure of just being exposed to the power and the dynamics of how the federal government works. And that's what I wanted to provide for our HBCU students here at home, how the state government works, how they can influence legislation. And we talked about that to the students. I said, look, if you have an idea, you can literally call me or one of your reps and say, look, why don't we do this? And in fact, that's how HBCU Day started. I had one of the SGA president from State reached out to me and had this idea. And so that's inspiring the students to know that they can be influential in legislation because they have great ideas as well. And so that's one of my proudest moments there.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you for that, for sure. And sorry for the glitch on the screen. I'm trying some new technology.
Okay.
But thank you for that. And to your point, like I think that it's so important that, you know, some people may say, you know, it's just a day. But like you said, that representation, that understanding that these things are tangible and these things are accessible to all of us, not just some of us, is so important. So kudos on that accomplishment as a sitting House of Representatives member. But now let's talk about Senate seat 42. What can you do as a member of Senate seat 42 that you could not do in 109? And what will you bring to Senate seat 42 that maybe even the great Senator Marlon Kempson wasn't able to do at that time?
So what I can do that I was not able to do is use the Senate rules more effectively. I will have the opportunity to, at least in the Senate, like I was telling you earlier about the rules and how they're different, I'll have the opportunity to stop bad bills that we typically can't do in the House just because we don't have the numbers.
Yeah.
But one senator can stop something. And that's why the hate crimes bill hasn't passed. I mean, it just takes one senator to object to it and it stops. And so we need people that will be willing to step out and be bold enough to hold up these bad bills that really affect our kids and our families back home disproportionately. And so that's one tool, that's one way. But also somebody that can be on Judiciary Committee and in these other committees in finance to effectively argue and articulate reasons why bills are good and bad. And by that, I mean, and I'll give you an example. I did not support this bond. Let's talk about, the bond reform bill.
Okay.
And the reason is because there were things within the bill that's very harmful, particularly for black man. And you have to understand the nuances that goes along in bills. Yes, it sounds good. You know, the title of the bill sounds good. The first 10 pages look good. But then when you get down to page 17 and you find that, you know, that paragraph that basically makes it where you're not innocent until proven guilty. And we've seen that play out already.
Yeah.
And so being an attorney, I think that's a tool to just be able to explain things to the General Assembly, to our colleagues, that they just don't understand because they weren't trained in that area.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's like my expertise, right? And so I can say this is the unintended consequence that will happen if we do this.
Yeah.
Particularly, I had a constituent reach out and thank me for voicing my opinion against this. It was a drug, we call it the war on drugs bill. But fentanyl is a very serious thing, and we need to catch the traffickers and stop that. But within that bill, it also, what it does is it punishes those who are suffering from addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
The users, not the traffickers, not the dealers. And so it's specific things like that where we need people to be able to amend these bills so where we're doing what we intend to do. Because what happens is we pass these bills and then now the judges' hands are tied because they're like, this is the law y'all passed. And then we said, oops, we didn't really intend it that way. But at that point, it's too late. Now somebody's liberty and life is on the line. You know, somebody's in jail when they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And then the kids are left in the system and you just start that trickle effect. And so it's really important to have people that can really understand and explain to other people why a bill is bad. And I've done that effectively in the House. About particular issues where I stood on the floor and I was advocating for my clients because I do this every day when I go to court. And that's another thing for me, man. I see how the system, the unintended consequences, I see it because I run up against brick walls as an attorney.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is not right. This is not how it's supposed to work. And so as a legislator, I can bring those things up and I can provide real life examples to my colleagues on both sides of the aisles. And I've had Republicans to say, wow, I didn't know that happens. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay, well, we're with you. And then they vote for an amendment that I will offer. And that, I mean, that's important, man, in the legislature to have that and be able to explain things like that, those nuances.
When I was a young boy, I had visions of fame.
Someone wants to see, but the world is full of pain, and my dreams, they left me.
And then I got stronger, and tired of the pain.
That's when I picked up the pieces, and I regained my name.
And I fought hard, y'all, to carve out my blame. And right now, you look at me, and it don't seem in vain.
This is about the end of our time, so I want to just give you just one last opportunity to just state, you know, one, you know, why should they vote for you? Where can they find more information about you, and how can they follow you on social media?
Okay, so follow me is just Deon Tedder. You type that in, you'll find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. DeonTedder.com is my website. But real brief, I want to tell you, because you mentioned earlier my platform. When I first ran for House, I said criminal justice reform, affordable housing, education. Those are my top three things. If you look at my track record, I've introduced and championed legislation dealing with all three. In fact, with education, I was on the education committee this past year, and I was very vocal against CRT. I actually was the one who brought up certain concerns about definitions of words and just specific simple stuff like that really would have had unintended consequences and where we where they removed some things from the bill because I voiced those concerns. And those are things that the average person is not going to pick up. But if I'm looking through it, I ask the question, well, what does this mean? Because this is going to be left up to individual interpretation, right? And we can't have that. We need to make sure we define everything. But criminal justice reform is huge for me. I represent juveniles, and I see the school-to-prison pipeline play out more and more now. So I'm actually championing legislation to really slow that down from our kids being put in the system so quickly. They're just being arrested quickly, expelled from school, and we know what that leads to. When it really doesn't have to be that way. So there's alternatives, and we need to find the alternatives. Economic opportunity. I'm all about bringing jobs to Charleston, to the Low Country, to District 109 and 42. And that's what I'll do as a state senator. And as state senator, this is an important district because it's an economic hub. You have Boeing, you have Bosch, you have Mercedes, the airport. I mean, everything is in this district. And so we need somebody who is not going to be self-interested and try to align themselves for personal gain. We need somebody that can't be bought, somebody that can't be swayed, and that's going to actually stand up and do the right thing for people. And I think I've shown that. That's the one thing I'm proud of. I don't owe anybody anything, and I don't belong to anybody. I'm not bought. I'm not paid for. I'm Deion Tedder, and I fight for people. And I do what my constituents ask me to do. And I think that's important. And we must have somebody that's going to look out for everybody's interests and not their own personal interests.
Absolutely. I think that's very well said. And thank you for making that case. And thank you for running. How can they find you? Said you're talking about finding social media and your website. Was it what again?
Yeah, DeonTedder.com. So that's just DeonTedder.
Oh, and just for those who may not know, what areas does Senate District 42 cover?
42, yeah. So you got downtown Charleston, Calhoun King on up, North Charleston area, going out to Dorchester County, out there by Fort Dorchester, Cathedral, all that area. And right now, Maryville, Ashleyville, a little snippet of West Ashley is in it. So West Ashley, city of Charleston, downtown Charleston, and North Charleston is within the Senate District 42. I would love and appreciate your support. I want to earn your vote. I want to earn your support. And so I want you, if you have questions, reach out to me. Go on the website, send me a question. I'd be happy to talk to you about where I stand on certain issues and why I vote the way I vote. And I think it's important to be transparent about those things. And so, yeah. And also one important thing is this is a special election. So this is a September 5th election date. This is not November. This is the primary special election, September 5th. Early voting will start August 21st. A lot of people don't know that. As I'm going around knocking on doors in this 110 degree weather, a lot of people that I meet and I talk to, they know about the race, but they don't know that it's September 5th. And that's so crucial. We have to make sure everybody knows that because it's going to come down to turnout. So September 5th, I need your vote. But remember, August 21st, you can vote early. And it's you can vote early at the voter registration headquarters. And that is now on Corporate Road. It moved, and I'll get you that information too, so you can share on your platforms. I'm sending that out as well. But yeah, September 5th is the special election.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. I know you got a lot of things going on. You canvassing, you got a brand new wife. You got married. You got a lot going on, but you took some time, you know, to reach out and, hey, I want to come out. So,
no, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a lot. I mean, people, when I talk to people, they're like, how are you doing this? I mean, literally, I was at a law firm where my the partner that I worked with passed away. Yeah. And so a lot of things just was shaken up in my life. went from a firm closing down. I started at a new firm in May. So I got a new job in May. I got married in June, and I'm running for a state senate. That's a lot at one time. But I've been able to stay with it because I'm a fighter and I stay focused. And you were at the jail the other day when I spoke to the inmates that graduated, that got their high school diploma, some and associate's degrees. And the message to them, and I tell young people all the time, don't give up. You got to persevere. Jeremiah 29:11 has gotten me everywhere because that is so true. And, you know, people look at me and they say, he's a lawyer. He has a suit. Oh, life was easy. It was not. It was not. Yeah. I didn't pass the bar on the first time. I didn't pass it on the second time. But I kept working. I kept fighting because I knew this is what I wanted to do. And that's the same way I'll fight for my constituents. And that's the same way I fight for my clients. Because this is real to me, and it really means a lot to me to be able to help people. Yeah. Because I was fortunate enough for my parents to sacrifice and work hard for me to get here, and I think it's incumbent upon me to make sure that other people have the same opportunities that I have.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much again, man. Good luck in the race. I'm a fan. You know, I've seen the work that you've done. I've seen the way you show up for a community. That doesn't mean that I'm closing the door to talking to anybody else, but I just always got to make sure when I got somebody in front of me that I give them their flowers and just give them, because it's hard doing the work. You know, a lot of people talk about doing the work, but like, it's hard to be out here in the field doing the work. You know, you got to leave your, you know, your wife, your wife, you know, you know, multiple times a week to go up to Columbia to represent the people of District 109. And you've done it well. You've done it as a younger person who had to fight, you know, as you mentioned earlier, against certain, you know, ageist ideas about young people and the way, especially young Black men, the way we're expected to sort of wait our turn until, until something happens, like till an opportunity opens up. And the truth is that a lot of the work they're waiting for us to do, we could be doing right now.
Yeah. We don't have the time. Yeah. I got friends, and you know, it's people younger and younger just dying each other. We can't, we have to go get past that mentality. And by young people being bold enough to step out and run, it's not an attack on older people. It's really not. And so when people say that, we don't want to listen. And no, we do. People always talk about how young people, particularly young Black men, the young folk need to do this. They need to be active. And then when we go out and when we step up to the plate and we want to lead, then they want us to sit back down. No, like we
have right now.
Yes. right. I mean, seriously.
And we have a lot to add. And we bring value.
We
have value. And honestly, and I know I'm sort of riffing now, but like, as somebody who works with young Black men on a day-to-day basis, the most impactful thing I can do is give them opportunities to lead and to take charge, to show them that their voice matters, that their voice has purpose, that they have something. They don't have to wait until they turn 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old to make an impact. You can do it at 15. You can make it at 12. You can make it at 18, like right then you are ready. You have a lot of stuff. Now, do you have experience? Do you need mentors to help guide you along the way? Absolutely. And I'm sure you have many, you know? So what we as the coming elders have to do is, yes, go get it, go hard. But as we're going hard, let's make sure that we're building up that next generation of leaders.
Exactly.
And we're open.
Because you got to know when you have to know when you become, at some point, you people just become ineffective.
Yeah.
And when you become ineffective, it doesn't mean you don't care. It just means that you don't have the same sway that you used to have. Because it's a different time. It's even people that serve with you are a younger generation on the other side. And so things change, and you do a disservice to the people when you make it about yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Thank you so much, bro. I actually am now going to have two episodes of content. So shout out to WDRB Media, the voice of the community. I appreciate it. My next 2 weeks of shows are in the can. Ha ha, take that. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank Representative Dion Tedder for taking the time to come out. Again, this is a special election. So this is not, you know, the one you're normally thinking about, which is in November. No, this is September next month. you'll be able to this election is actually taking place, and you can, and as he mentioned earlier, early voting starts on August 21st. So if you are in those areas that he mentioned, I'm sure he's going to share that information out for me to share via our social medias about these upcoming dates, these very important upcoming dates. September 5th is this election date. Do not vote and then come to me complaining about what's happening in your areas. That's something that I'm very strong about. If you don't vote, I don't want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. And I mean that with all my heart. Well, two birds on the same wings on the same bird. Do not talk to me if you don't vote. That is something I mean. Anyway, sorry. Thank you for tuning in. Continue to tune in every Friday at 5:30. Please listen live 24/7 by going to WDRB Media and click on the Listen Live tab. Also, if you want to be a guest on the show or want free advertising, please reach out to me at realtalkwithrajan@gmail.com. You can connect with me on Instagram or Twitter or at realtalkwithrajan.com. You've been listening to WDRB, the voice of the community. I am Rajan Lewis, and this has been Real Talk with Rajan Radio. And always remember, in closing, in the words of Frederick Douglass, it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. My question for you is always, what are you building? Now, that is Real Talk, and I will see y'all next week. Thank you,